Vorpal Network is the bomb, the cutting edge of geekdom. Comics, advice, D&D, movies, video games, RPGs. Finding it easy, just stay calm. VorpalNetwork.com.
Hey, this is Elminster of Shadowdale, and you're listening to The Tome.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 88. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interviews show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, find an unremembered kingdom with the Forgotten Realms campaign guide and player's guide. This episode is brought to you by the fantastic gaming blog, ChattyDM.net. And it's worth noting that this episode, along with all episodes of The Tome, are brought to you by listeners like you. If you hear something you like in the reviews on the show, or mentioned in interviews, you can be sure to find them on the Tome's Amazon store. And that goes a long ways towards helping me pay for the show's expenses. And for those of you that have been using the Amazon store, thank you very much. It's great to get the support for the show, and also be able to give you the online discount. In other news, I can't believe I forgot to mention a few weeks ago, but this most recent October, the Tome Show has gone into its third year. We're over 2 years old now, and we're sticking with this thing, it seems, and not going anywhere. But now, let's introduce our reviews. In this episode, Chuck Martinelli, Jaron, or Garen from the forums, and myself review the Forgotten Realms campaign guide and the Forgotten Realms player's guide. It's worth noting that Chuck and I arranged to do this on the forums. If you want to know what's going on with the show, be sure that you're hanging out at the forums too. You too could be mentioned on an episode for excellent posting like Garen, Freezer, or Astute One. And today we are here with Chuck Martinell, regular listener of the show and a freelance writer. We are going to chat a little bit about the two new Forgotten Realms books, the Forgotten Realms Campaign Guide and the Forgotten Realms Player's Guide. But first, Chuck, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your freelance work? So if people want to look you up, they can know where to find you.
Well, I've primarily been working with Dragonlance for the last couple of years. I've been helping out with some of their books that have come out, Dragons of Kryn, Races of Ancillon. I've done work in both those, and also have an ebook online called Atlatum on the Dragonlance Nexus.
Very good. So you're the Dragonlance buff.
Yeah, I'm also have been in the Forgotten Realms for several years. Got out about 98, 99 when I felt that just wasn't suiting me anymore.
Okay, so you've got a different background than myself. I've sort of stayed pretty constant in the realms for a long time, so that'll bring a good perspective on our discussion tonight.
Yeah, I'm just someone who's coming back in, and I'm really excited with the new books, actually.
Good. Well, let's just dive right into it then. Let's start off talking about the Forgotten Realms campaign guide. The primary writers are Bruce Cordell, Chris Sims, and Ed Greenwood. And I have to say, it was a bit of a relief to me that Ed Greenwood was on board for this book.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's really the voice of the realms. Without him in this project, we would definitely have a pretty weak support, I believe, from Wizard of the Coast.
Yeah. And honestly, I think it would have been nice if he was a little more involved. It became very clear based on the process of these books that they already knew what the new books were going to be, and he was just sort of hired on to write some of it.
Yeah, I agree with you. there, you can tell which parts he had a hand in, and you can tell which parts were already pre-written before he was even involved in the project.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, they had announced a lot of the changes to the realms, and after they did that, people were starting to ask, and I was starting to ask, what part has Ed Greenwood had in all this? And the response was, well, we haven't finalized anything that he's writing any of it. So clearly the decisions that people were concerned about had already long been made before he was involved. So the introduction of the book, I want to talk about the introduction for this book a little bit. It's very similar to the one in the Player's Guide, so we'll just talk about it the one time. It seems to me that the introduction is trying to accomplish two different goals. And neither one of those seems to be super focused on introducing people to the realms. One of the things...
Yeah,
go ahead.
I was just going to say I agree with that. I mean, the introduction, it seems kind of bland. It's without flavor.
Yeah. And the two goals that I see for it is they're trying to calm the nerves of Forgotten Realms fans. You know, the people who are concerned and worried about this new direction for the realms, they have their top 10 list of these are the basic things that you need to know. It's not so different as you think it is. You know, it seems that one of the main goals is just trying to calm people down from not being so angry about the changes.
Yeah, and also even includes things for folks who aren't in Forgotten Realms with the sidebar it has for not Forgotten Realms, no problem. Right. I found that to be pretty interesting to throw in there too.
Exactly. Well, and that was the other goal that I think that I was going to mention that I think the introduction had was they're trying to convince non-Forgotten Realms people that it's okay to buy this book anyway, which seems pretty consistent with some of the things we were hearing out of Wizards of the Coast months ago, in that they really wanted to try to make these books something that people were interested in buying, even if they weren't Realms fans. They seemed to be frustrated that people wouldn't pick up third edition Forgotten Realms books because, well, that's the Forgotten Realms and I don't run that setting, so I don't need that book.
Yeah, and from the most part, from the readings here, they tried to make it more generic and tried to allow people to incorporate parts of the world into their own homebrew campaigns.
Sure, I can see some of that too, yeah. Which is a little bit of a departure from the original concept of the realms. You know, the idea of the original realms was that it was a living, connected, you know, realistic style world with a realistic climate and geography and economy and that, you know, culture and society and that kind of stuff, which, you know, by its nature would require things to be more or less connected. So it's a bit of a departure from all of that. Let's go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, it is a departure. You know, the original idea of the realms was originally it was supposed to be connected to even Earth, you know, back in 1985, 87, when they first came out with Forgotten Realms. And it's really, you know, this version of the realms compared to the original it's really different to me, at least.
Yeah, it's definitely a pretty good departure. It's not, I guess, it's the actual changes that they've made is not as dramatically different than I was worried it would be. Having myself gotten into the realms during the second edition days, it doesn't seem like as big of a departure in terms of what's actually there. It's just there seems to be a pretty big departure on the philosophy of the design and development. You know, like you mentioned, you could probably pretty easily pluck part of this book out and stick it in any campaign setting, which definitely would not have been possible in the original concept of the world.
Yeah, and I think that's a definite change in authorship there, too. You have different authors working on this version of the realms compared to the 1993 revision or even the 2000 revision.
Yeah. So chapter one is titled Loudwater, and it is basically giving you a location and a starting adventure for your Forgotten Realms game.
Yeah, and I didn't quite understand. Why did they throw the adventure at you right away? You know, usually they're at the end of the book.
Which makes a lot of sense.
And to me, this is like they're throwing something in my face right away going, here's the adventure, read the adventure first, then we give you the information. Yeah. That just doesn't work for me, at least.
Yeah, and again, they picked a location that was pretty generic. I don't know that there's been any information about Loudwater in previous editions.
Not that I remember. I mean, unless, you know, I have a gap here that isn't filled real well, but I've never heard of Loudwater.
Yeah,
I mean, other than just in passing.
Right, and so it seems to me that this is them. And obviously, this is the chapter to get people into the world, but not overwhelm them with the realms. I mean, honestly, this adventure could have been set into any world. It didn't necessarily have anything to do with the realms, other than a few names here and there.
And even that was just pretty generic vanilla, basically.
Absolutely. I don't know. It's one of my beefs with campaign setting books, the whole need to put an introductory adventure into them. Honestly, I think it's a lot of wasted space.
I agree completely with that. I mean, this can be a paperback $10 add-on, you know, it's in the store rather than taking up 30 pages of my game book.
Right. It would have been a wonderful idea for a web enhancement to try to get people into the world, give them a free adventure, and then suddenly they're hooked, you know?
Yeah, I mean, anything but this.
Yeah. And I've had the same opinion since the third edition Realms came out way back in the beginning of third edition. I don't know. I just, if I buy a campaign setting book, I don't want to have to lug around 10, 15 pages of an adventure that at most I'm going to run once and probably not even that, you know?
Yeah, and that's the same with, like, even Dragonlance, the DMG. All that stuff's got adventures in it now, and it's just filling up space that could be used for more important things, like information.
Yeah, if I wanted an adventure, I would have bought the Forgotten Gnomes Adventures, you know?
That's true.
So that's chapter one. Chapter two, then, is called Adventuring. And while it's called Adventuring, it seems to me that this is mostly sort of a, or at least the meat of this chapter is giving a bit of history to the world.
Yeah, and then includes some of the treasures of the world and tries to get you up to speed, but I think it really kind of fails at a lot of that.
It does the history okay in terms of the last 100 years since the spell plague. You know, it doesn't give you a lot beyond that. It's more of, it's definitely set up to try to catch up people that already know something about the realms. If you don't know about the realms, it doesn't do much, I don't think, to make you aware of what the world is.
Yeah, you really need to almost have the, what was it, the grand history of the realms, or?
Yeah. Which is a book that I really like for the Forgotten Realms geeks out there, but if you're not a big fan of this world, then it's a little dry.
Yeah, definitely.
And it also, like you mentioned it, you know, it had different treasures and that kind of stuff, which really makes it come off a little bit like a hodgepodge chapter. It's sort of the we couldn't figure out where to put these things, but they seem kind of neat, so let's throw them all here.
Yeah, it's definitely a multi-class chapter.
And I'm not even sure, I don't know, the treasure, when we talk about treasure in this chapter, we're not talking about any new items or magic items or any of that kind of stuff. It's more of descriptions of art objects.
Yeah, we're talking about things like a large bowl in good condition or a mirror made of reflective polish. It's nothing that you couldn't get out of the player's handbook and throw in here, I feel.
And is, again, extremely generic. It definitely doesn't seem like it's something that belongs in a Realms book.
It's very, very vanilla to me. It's plain as you can get.
Yeah. So chapter three, then, is called Magic. I found this chapter to be fairly interesting, but I thought it was lacking rules. You know, if they're going to introduce these new ideas to me, like Earth nodes, then I want to, as a DM, I want to have some crunch to go along with that.
Yeah, it's a lot of fluff here. It's just not much telling me how to make this game relevant.
Right, and it's more than just. I mean, it also mentions the plague lands. There's still some parts of the Forgotten Realms here 100 years later that still have active pockets of spell plague running around, but there's no mechanics as a DM on what happens in the spell plague in these active plague lands or how to handle them mechanically and how it affects players and all that kind of stuff. You get a little bit of that in the player's guide, and we'll talk about that later. But I don't know. I just really feel like that chapter needs some crunch.
Yeah, and it's even, you know, it even has, like, effects on the visitors, but there should almost be a table or something there that, as a DM, I don't have to think of, well, it's wild magic. What should I do here?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
it's putting a lot of weight on the shoulders of the DM to make that up as they go.
You know, and that's the one thing I really feel from this book. It gives the DM a lot of leeway to make up their own stuff. But also, though, on the other hand, when you're doing adventures like a Gen Con or cons, every DM's going to do this differently, and it's just going to cause a lot of table discussion that you don't really need.
Absolutely. And I think this is one of the areas where they could have really capitalized on the, here's an idea that you can pluck out of this world and put it into any campaign setting. You know, if they had given us active plague lands with mechanics and rules on how to use them in the game, that would have been a concept that could have easily been placed in any world, in any adventure, for any, you know, for any gaming group out there.
Yeah, because the way it looks to me right now, if I try to take this into my homebrew campaign, I can't use it as effectively if there was more crunch to it. Right now, I'd be designing it all from scratch, and I don't want to do that.
Right, right. If I wanted to design it from scratch, I wouldn't buy the book, you know?
Yeah.
I buy the book because I want them to do some of the work for me, and this is really just an idea, which is really pretty thoroughly covered, you know? I mean, it's not even a particularly unique idea. It feels a lot like the Mornland from Eberron.
No, definitely.
So that's the magic chapter. Chapter 4 is the cosmology chapter, where they sort of explain the cosmology of the world and the different planes and where the different gods live and that kind of stuff. I found some very interesting little tidbits in here. I wonder if it wouldn't have been good just to make this part of the same chapter as the Pantheon.
Yeah, it's definitely the same ideas, the same structure. Why not put them both together? Instead, we have an extra couple pages wasted with a picture.
Yeah, I don't mind the content. It's actually fairly interesting. I like some of the discussion of the homes of the gods and the planes and all that kind of stuff. It just seems like, why is this two different chapters? Especially because these early chapters tend to be a little bit thinner, a little bit lighter.
Oh, yeah, I mean, we're already on, you know, by the time you hit page 60, you're already on chapter 4, and you haven't gotten a whole lot yet, I feel.
Right. And then we get into the next chapter, chapter 5, which is our Pantheon chapter. Which, again, I liked the information. It definitely leaves room open for a Faiths and Pantheons book, you know, like they've had in previous editions, which they say is not going to come, at least not in the foreseeable future.
They said lots of things.
But I tell you what, as a Forgotten Realms fan, I want to see a book about the gods, you know? I want to see a book that's not only a detailed description of the Forgotten Realms gods, I want to see a book that describes how to be a divine player in the Forgotten Realms world, you know, with lots of feats and paragon paths and things to trade out for my players as a, you know, as a Forgotten Realms person.
And I wouldn't be surprised. You're going to see more add-ons. They say right now you're not going to see any more, but that's going to be something they'll probably either put into the Dragon magazine or somewhere down the road touch again.
Right. And again, that seems like something that would very easily fit into a Dragon magazine. But at the same time, I don't want to have to sort through, you know, 17 PDFs to figure out, to look at all the major gods. I'd much rather have it in a book format, which is why the digital push for these things is a little bit concerning to me.
Yeah, I'm more of a paper tree guy, so when it comes down to it, I'd rather be able to read it in front of me rather than, like you said, looking through 17 different PDFs, piecing things together and trying to go, oh, this is where this information is, and I have to close this window and go to the other guy, check that out.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, otherwise, I mean, the information that's there is good. I like I'm not even particular. I had a lot of sort of Forgotten Realms anger when we first started learning about the changes to the realms. But I've sort of gotten over a lot of that, including the deaths and some of the gods that are missing.
Yeah, it's quite interesting to see that they actually got rid of some of their gods. This is kind of the first time I feel that Forgotten Realms has actually changed. You had the Time of Troubles trilogy in which they had a few gods die, but they were all pretty much replaced, and others came back later who were reborn or re-raised or whatever you want to call it, and things didn't really change. And now you have like gods like Tyr who are gone, and it's like an off-camera sequence.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of those are gone. Some of those, it seems to me there are some hints that they might still be around.
Well, the one that, you know, it's got to be around somewhere is the goddess of magic. I mean, they can say she's dead, but there's something going on in one of the adventures, and who knows, or Living Forgotten Realms, that she's going to come back.
I'm guessing novels.
Yeah, I'm guessing that you can't have your goddess of magic to be dead. It just doesn't work.
Well, and I talked to Ed Greenwood about that subject at Origins, and he mentioned that she may not be actually gone. And beyond that, if you look through the book carefully with that thought in mind, that she may not actually be gone, more than once they don't refer to her as dead Mistra. They refer to her as missing Mistra.
Clever choice of words there.
Absolutely.
They should run for office.
But one thing I think that would have been nice to have in this Pantheon section is I think they could have highlighted where some of the missing gods went. There are some gods that are just not there, and there's no explanation as to where they went.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you look through the list. I mean, like I mentioned before, Tyr's dead, but I don't remember reading how he died. Right. Or maybe I skipped over that part.
Well, and that was one of the things that was briefly skimmed over in the Grand History of the Realms.
But if I don't own that book, that information could be put back into this one, so I can say, oh, this is what happened to it. My first book I read was Pool of Radiance of the Forgotten Realms, and one of the clerics was a cleric of Tyr. And that's who I used to run was clerics of Tyr. Right. And now I can't, and I have no explanation as of why.
Right. It would have been nice to just say in the last, because, I mean, they've already spent a big chunk of the book saying these are the changes for the last 100 years, so why not have a section of the Pantheon saying, here are the gods that are gone, and just a brief bullet point list of where they went. You know, they mention, they don't mention some of the missing gods like Azuth or Savrus, who are ancillary gods of magic. But if you read carefully and read the right places, you know that they disappeared into the astral. Well, we have no idea if that means they're dead, or if that means they're just wandering around in the astral plane, or if that means that they're around, they just didn't happen to make the cut, so they weren't listed.
Or somebody just forgot they were gods because Forgotten Realms has 50,000 gods.
That, I suppose, but at the same time, with Ed Greenwood's name on it, I have a hard time believing that he could have forgotten that they were around.
No, I just, it's an old joke. It's one of my older gaming groups about the Forgotten Realms gods.
I understand. But they've also cleaned up the Pantheon a little bit. They've gotten rid of some of the extra gods. And by extra gods, I mean they had a very Egyptian Pantheon.
Yep, the
Mulhorand.
Yep, and that's nice to see that actually be more aligned, because when that the Egyptian or the Oriental continent was formed and the Native American continent was formed, TSR was just, I feel, grasping at straws at that point and trying to expand for history's sake.
Well, and they didn't just get rid of the Pantheon from Mulhorand, they got rid of the entire country.
Yeah, which
they had, and right next to there was a Sumerian-based empire or realm or whatever that is not entirely gone but is dramatically changed, and their Pantheon is gone. So they've gotten rid of a lot of these sort of subsystems of gods, but in some cases they didn't actually get rid of them as so much as say, well, this was always this other god under a different name.
So and that makes which that makes sense.
And there's always sort of been some implication of that in the last 10-15 years of the world anyway.
I mean, other game settings do that all the time, so why not Forgotten Realms kind of incorporate that idea back?
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah. That's the Pantheon, then. The bulk of this book, though, is Chapter 6.
Which I feel is a huge, huge kind of letdown.
Okay.
When I come back into it, it's you know, when I left there, things were pretty much the same for a series of years. And when I come back into Chapter 6, this is where I come into not having read the Grand History of the Realms and wanting to see what has changed in the last 100 years and how can I run my campaign setting from this information listed in this book. And I just feel like this is a huge failure in that area.
Okay. I found, in my opinion, this chapter is more complete than the third edition campaign setting book in terms of telling me about the different parts of the realms.
And you have me on that one because I never bought the third edition book because I got out after second edition.
Right, but at the same time, I don't know, I think it suffers from some of the same problems that the third edition version had, though, in that they've only got one book and a very complex and detailed world to describe, so they can only do so much with it. So, you know, in third edition, I could have said, okay, well, this is fine because I know 6 months, 2 years, 3-4 years down the road, I'm going to get a book that just details that region and I'm going to get lots of information.
Yeah, and I've seen those books and I've looked through them and I feel like those are important books if you're going to run a campaign, and I kind of wish they still would do that.
And some of those books were better than others. But yeah, I mean, absolutely. I'm going to miss having my regular fix of information about the realms. I guess I'll get it in the terms of a couple of articles here and there. But if I want to run a campaign in, you know, the north, there's no one resource that I can take with me to say this is the information you need to know about running a game in the north.
And then you're back to searching various PDFs and pulling what you need, and sometimes they won't have what you need, and then you're just out rather than just having a nice source book to open up and go, here's the north.
Yeah. But ultimately, I mean, in terms of a first campaign setting book giving me the basics of each of the regions, I thought it did a decent job.
Oh, yeah, it does that very well.
I didn't face the disappointment that you seem to have faced with some of that in terms of giving you what you need.
Well, a lot of mine is just I'm coming back to the realms after a good layoff, and other than reading a few novels here, looking at some game supplements here and there, I feel like I'm not getting everything I need to start here. Well, and I feel a little bit lost.
And I wonder, I don't know, I almost feel like that's part of the point. They're trying to give the players and the DMs more ownership of the world. So they're trying to not limit you by saying this is exactly what you do in this area, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know, I feel like that's sort of the point, is they don't want to detail everything from the last 100 years. They don't want to detail every little thing because they want to leave it more open so that players and DMs will take more ownership and make the world what they want to make of it. And I don't know, I think they do as good a job of that as they've ever done before.
I don't disagree with that at all. I just, you know, like I said, trying to adventure here without having to go buy other supplements from 3.5, it's going to be pretty difficult for a first timer or someone coming back, because there's just a lot of gray area, which is great for a DM who loves to create things.
Yeah.
But for those of us who are on a budget or time restraint, it's tough.
Well, and honestly, a lot of the third edition supplements for those regions are not as useful as you might want them to be. I mean, it's useful in terms of giving you the history, but it doesn't tell you much about the status quo, you know, about what the world, what that part of the world is like now.
Yeah, and that, same with like my second edition stuff. I got some great stuff on Cormyr from second edition, but Cormyr from fourth edition is much different just based on looking on the map and reading what I get a little bit in the book.
Sure. And Cormyr is one of the areas that they claim has changed the least.
Yeah, and I still, though, you can sense that there is a change. It's more imperial, and it's a different feel to the land, but a lot of the locations are at least the same.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I was okay. I was happy with most of this chapter. I felt like the decisions they made to describe new things, like the returned Abir, the new continent that replaced Mazteca.
Yep.
I don't know. I almost felt like they either needed to give me more or give me less. You know, it feels very tacked on.
Yeah, it's definitely very gray area here that it gives the DMs a chance to create here, but yet it's almost, like you said, tacked on to the end of this chapter.
Yeah. I almost feel like that's the place to run if you want to have a Forgotten Realms game that doesn't feel anything like the Forgotten Realms.
Or the part you pull out and throw into your homebrew campaign and you have a nice little chunk from the book here to help you out.
Yeah. And I almost get the same feel for the Underdark section. They spent a lot of time detailing the Underdark, and the Underdark has always been something that's been used in my games, and it has been used in games that I've played in, but it's never been the focus of a campaign to the point that it would require that much material on it. You know, unless I go out and buy the Underdark book.
Well, you know why they detail it so much. It's because of the popularity of the Drow. I mean,
yeah.
You have a lot of players, younger players especially, this is where they're going to be. Because they read the Drizzt books.
Yeah.
Or Drizzt. Great. I believe I say it properly.
I don't think anybody's going to chase after you for saying it wrong, because I hear...
as long as I don't call...
I hear the author, you know, naming it different ways sometimes.
Well, as long as I don't call him Drippet.
Yeah. but yeah, I know. I mean, I guess I understand that, and I'm guessing maybe the Underdark supplemental book from 3rd edition was popular enough that they felt it deserved a whole big chunk in this book, but that's an area where it's like, okay, I think they could have had less space taken on the Underdark and given me more of that other stuff that we wanted from the other chapters, you know, more of explaining those magical locations and more of the explanation of the Pantheon and that kind of stuff.
Well, that's where I get a lot of my problems with this chapter is it does so well with the Underdark, I feel. It gives you a very good game setting, but it does so poorly on the other side of you looking at your other countries that you probably would be visiting, like Waterdeep and the Dale Lands, Cormyr, and Icewind Dale.
Oh, see, and I thought they micromanaged a little bit on places like Waterdeep and the Dale Lands. I think they spent a lot of time going into detail that wasn't particularly necessary, considering there hasn't been huge changes. And people who are familiar enough with the realms to want to deal with that a lot already know a lot about those areas.
But if you have people coming in like myself who are coming back, this is where we're going to flock first to start our campaigns. And you almost have to do it this way to give people just a little bit more information to feel like they can get their feet wet again before they start exploring the really changed areas of the realms.
Yeah, I don't know, I just, especially the Waterdeep section, I think, just went a little bit longer than necessary.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, Waterdeep is a nice place and all, but it's
you know?
Yeah, it's, I mean, there's Suzal or in Cormyr, and that gets a paragraph or two?
Right.
And that's an important city. You get Waterdeep that has pages.
Absolutely. And then it moves on to the last chapter, chapter 7, which is called Threats. And
ooh, scary.
I actually kind of like the threat section.
I did too, a lot.
This is the area where it says, okay, these are the different things out there that you can use as a DM to use as the bad guy in your game.
Yeah, and it really does spell out a lot of good things too to use.
Absolutely. And there are some, I really like that there are some that are clearly the bad guy, right? I mean, you've got the Zhentarim. You've got
the Church of Bane.
The Church of Bane, the Red Wizards of Thay. Okay, these are definitely the bad guys. But you've also got some of the... These aren't really bad guys, but they can play the villain in your specific story. You know, they're not outright evil. Maybe they're unaligned or whatever. You know, like the... is it the five companies?
That's what I was just going to say. The five companies could go either way, really.
Yeah, they're clearly unaligned. They're merchants and they're mercenaries. But, I mean, as merchants and mercenaries, they could be the bad guy in your story without necessarily being evil.
Yeah, or they could be the employer that you're working for and creating your adventures.
Absolutely. And that actually points out one of the things that I kind of miss... in that they give us the threats, but they don't give us the allies.
Yeah, it's just like, here's the guys you should be worried about, but you'll find friends eventually. Make them up.
Which is sort of similar to, I guess, the overall 4th edition design philosophy. Like, when you look at what's in the Monster Manual, they don't have things in the Monster Manual other than things that you want to fight.
Yeah, and I'm hoping Monster Manual 2 will correct that, but... If this is a one-shot book, you know, you almost need to put that stuff in there to help people out.
Well, and when I first read this book, I saw that and I thought, okay, well, that's fine because maybe they'll give me that in the player's guide because it makes sense there.
But...
As we're going to find out, it's not there, is it?
That's right.
You know, they give me hints about things like the Harpers, which broke up and have reformed. Tell me more about the Harpers. You know, maybe I want to have Harpers in my game.
And that's one of the more popular groups that is not even included at all. I mean, other than just saying it was here, it's gone, it's back, it's a shadow of its former self.
Right.
Well, great. Who's even in charge?
And if you don't know anything about the realms, does any of that mean anything to you?
No, not at all. And the sad part is, like, if I want to start a campaign, where are the Harpers even... centered at anymore? You know, are they just in the Dale Lands? They get booted to Cormyr? Are they in,
They did mention, and I don't even remember where it was now, but there's one known Harper base that's a certain tower in a certain kingdom that nobody really goes around.
Yes, so now I have to hunt through the country or the country part of the book trying to find this one piece of information that...
Right. Because there's no central place to look up information about the Harpers.
No, and the index is no help either, but we'll get there later.
Well, and the same thing could be said about the Purple Dragons and the War Wizards of Cormyr. You
know? Yep. They are...
There's all these organizations that could be allies and could be major story elements, but we don't have any information about them.
And I think they really needed to balance out the game. I mean, the feel here is... Oh, the Forgotten Realms. Oh, they're under attack by everybody, it seems like now.
Yeah, and I guess that's them trying to fit the realms into their vision of the points of light concept to make the world more dangerous, which means that the heroes have to be more heroic.
Well, it was plenty dangerous before, I always thought. Yeah. Maybe 3rd edition made it safer, but... I can't speak if it did or didn't.
Yeah, well, I'd say 3rd edition maybe made it... It made it more gray. There was more shades of gray in 3rd edition, you know? The Red Wizards even stopped being the big menacing villain and started being a mercantile
thing. Yeah, that kind of shocked me when the Red Wizards now pull up and they're opening up wares instead of trying to take over through espionage or through political intrigue.
Well, they're back to that in 4th edition, so.
Which, we'll guess we'll see what happens with that, since they don't have a homeland anymore.
Well, they've got, I guess that's one of the big changes for the Red Wizards, is that there are some people wandering around the world calling themselves Red Wizards, because they used to be part of that organization. But there are still Red Wizards in Thay. They're just not running the country anymore, because Zaz Tam just completely took over.
He was a bad guy.
Which, I don't know, it was always sort of my impression that he was basically running things anyway.
Yeah, well, from what I've read, it always seemed that same way to myself.
So, next on the list, then, is the index. I think you had something you wanted to say about the index.
Well, I mean, the index is one page, two page. What, I don't remember off the top of my head. I think it's a page and a quarter, and it doesn't help me look things up, really. I mean, it gives me some of the basics, but like if I'm looking for the Harpers, like we mentioned before, there's no listing for them. Right. You know, where the older second edition indexes would have had way too much things that you could find. Now it's to the point where it's like, we used a whole page for the index. Let's cut it down to half.
Yeah. And that seems to be a theme running through a lot of the fourth edition books, is that the indexes are just entirely inadequate.
Well, that even if you're looking up stuff, it doesn't help if you're looking for a specific thing and it sends you to the main heading of the whatever you're looking for. If I'm looking for Moonstare, and it's mentioned in three parts of the book, it only sends me to the part that's mainly mentioned.
Right. Yeah. And then the last section is new monsters, which I found to be exactly what it advertises.
Yep, nothing different there.
Nothing, you know, to write home about, but nothing, you know, there's nothing disappointing, but nothing that really stood out as fantastic either.
No, it is nice to see some things, like you have Manchun statted out or Fazul statted out. Mm-hmm. Those are some nice things if you want to have your end campaign there. But it's also would have been nice to have allies statted out too, or just had allies included in the book somewhere.
Some of them are mentioned here and there, but yeah, you're right.
Well, I mean, even look at this book. I mean, you have the two biggest names in Forgotten Realms, and Elminster gets some headings.
He gets a sidebar, yeah.
And, you know, the drow elf that I will not name again gets nothing. I mean,
not even mentioned.
He's already alive. People know that he's alive. Spoiler alert for those of you who didn't know. Now you know. But he's alive, but yet the most, I would say probably the most popular character in the realms is missing.
Absolutely. Well, and he's generally been pretty conspicuous in his absence. In third edition, anyway, I know that they didn't talk much about him either.
Yeah, and then the thing else I noticed is a lot of folks who are going to come from 3X, whatever, are going to see fourth edition. They're going to be looking for what happened to my favorite characters.
Yes.
What happened to their lives, and they're not going to get that. They're going to get, they're dead. Well, how did they die?
Or, in some cases, you're just going to get, they're not mentioned. They might be dead. They might not be dead. We have no idea, you know. Blackstaff, Kelvin Blackstaff Aronson is one of those that I was hunting for information about, and it's like, oh, there is no information. They mention his tower in Waterdeep, but the implication is that he's not in it. That doesn't tell us who is. Or I guess it
and there's a new is. And there's a new Blackstaff running it. I mean, that's all you know about him. I mean, that could just be on vacation. He's hanging out with the goddess of magic.
Or he just moved.
Seems to me with this book a lot, they left a lot of gray area. I think they're going to try to fill with either novels or dragon supplements.
Yeah, I think they're trying to leave themselves a lot of wiggle room to do things with it later. And I think they're also trying to give the DMs and the players a lot of wiggle room so that if they want to do stuff with it, they can. You know, if I happen to be familiar with Kelvin Blackstaff, then I can create a story that you know, uses that.
I also kind of wonder how much the Living Forgotten Realms is playing a part in the setting we're getting here to play with.
Yeah,
I don't know. They're not trying to entice you to join in that to get more information, because I've been told there's 20 to 40 some adventures that will be out covering different places in the realms.
Yeah, the only issue with the Living adventures is that they don't tend to be, I don't know, they don't tend to be real revealing in terms of story and history and a lot of that kind of stuff. A lot of times.
As I say, if it's like the Greyhawk ones, it's very plain adventures that you could have plopped anywhere.
Yeah, and so far from what I've seen, because I'm an RPGA member and I've looked at some of those adventures, I haven't seen anything that really felt like this illuminates, you know, part of the realms for me.
But I'm just wondering if that's not part of their reasoning here as to, well, maybe people will join this to see if they can find out more. And
yeah. Well, we can wait and see.
That's all we can do.
In any case, the cover price on this book is $40. At the Tomes Amazon store, it is on sale for $26.
A much better price.
I would say so.
Shop there.
Absolutely. Help the show. But yeah, I mean, if you're not a Forgotten Realms DM, then this book is maybe worth $20 for the inspirational parts.
I would say $20 would be a fair price tag.
And I'd say if you're a Forgotten Realms player, it's maybe worth $25-$30. If you can get it on sale, then it's not a bad value. But it's definitely not a book that you need to have as a player. I want to make that very clear. If you want to know more about the realms and you're playing in it, then I think it's worth $25-$30.
Yeah, this is definitely not something for a player to run out and buy and think they're going to be using a lot. This is something definitely for those people who want to fill in chunks of history or a DM.
Yeah. But for a Forgotten Realms DM, I thought it was worth the cover price. I mean, I think you get what you pay for.
I actually was quite pleased with the book overall, and I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah, and I want to make that clear, because I don't know, it seems like that we're coming down on it a lot in the things that we're talking about. But yeah, I was pleased with what was there.
Well, it's easy to be critical about something. It's harder to, you know, lift it up and say this part was fantastic.
You bet.
Even though, you know, when you're reading it, you know, a lot of stuff you get is like, wow, this is kind of good. This is cool. Like, I really liked the new comment they threw in that book.
Yeah.
You know, I really think it changed it up, and there's good things in the book.
You bet. Absolutely. So with that, let's go ahead and change gears here and look at the Forgotten Realms Player's Guide. The Forgotten Realms Player's Guide was written by Rob Hinsu, Logan Bonner, and Robert J. Schwab. All well-known names in the industry, and not the same names that are on the campaign guide. And I think some of that comes out a little bit. I feel like there are some maybe incongruencies between the two.
Yeah, you can definitely tell it's two different set of authors here with some different thoughts working to the same goal.
Yes. And one of those things, one of those differences that I see comes out right in the first chapter, which is about races. So let's go ahead and talk about those. There's two brand new, fully statted out races. Those are the Drow and the Genasi. I found that the Drow were, I don't know, they were okay. I wasn't particularly super excited or thrilled about the Drow, but maybe that's just because we've been hit over the head with them for long enough that it's sort of become old news to me.
Yeah, that's the feeling I got with it, was I've been fed Drow stuff enough where now it's just like, they're just part of the campaign and there's nothing overly special about them.
Yeah. But the Genasi I thought were really cool.
Yeah, they are kind of interesting. It's definitely a different, interesting race to include in the player's handbook, I feel.
Yeah, and it has a very different feel to it. It did involve, they retconned a little bit of the Genasi, because the Genasi were originally introduced in 3rd edition, and they worked differently, and they, you know, according to the 4th edition realms, the Genasi didn't show up until the Spell Plague. According to the 3rd edition realms, they'd been around for a long time, there just weren't very many of them.
And we retconned there.
Yes.
And I'm not very familiar with the Genasi, because when I stopped playing, they weren't around yet. So this is a very interesting race to throw in here, because they seem like they are one tough group of folks.
Yeah, well, in the 3rd edition, there were very distinct separate races of Genasi. There was Air Genasi, Fire Genasi, you know, and they were all different, completely different races that had little to do with each other.
But now you pick your different type of soul.
Right, and so that's completely changed. And in fact, if you take the right feats, you can be a Genasi that taps into all of the elements.
Yeah, they're definitely a tank.
Yeah. After that, though, they go through and they go ahead and explain the other races. They take the player's handbook races and sort of explain, okay, this is what this race is like in the realms, which for the most part is not a surprise and completely standard for what you see in the player's handbook.
I found it kind of interesting that they got rid of all the different elven races that Forgotten Realms had at one time, and now kind of lumped them into, well, these were all already elves, or they were already eldren, and it just didn't know it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And but at the same time, they still kind of kept those. You know, if you're playing an elf, then you can choose feats that make you a wood elf. You know? So there's still some element of the sub-races there without having to actually make there be each individual one be a separate race.
And I think that's where part of the confusion though people have with that is you have to take the feats now and make yourself a different type of elf rather than just saying, I'm a wood elf, where's my bonuses for it?
Right. Which, I mean, I guess that's an interesting way of doing things. But if I don't take that feat, does that mean I'm not really a wood elf?
That's very interesting. I think I understand why they did it, though. If you had a separate entry for every wood elf, moon elf, I mean, we're talking extra pages, which, you know, previously, as we just said, you know, condenses stuff down a little bit.
Yeah. And other things that I thought were, I don't know, missing from this chapter is they mention a lot of other races that are unique to the realms. And make the realms interesting and are mentioned several times throughout the book, but you get absolutely no stats for them. You know? They mention gnomes and orcs and divas, which is their name for what used to be the Aesimar, Goliaths, shades, and even the shifters, which translated over from Eberron. All get mentioned in different places of the world and in this chapter, but we have no stats for them at all.
And they could have done this at the end of the book like they did the Monster Manual, where they included several different races that you could play very easily, just in two pages. Give me the stat block, give me the crunchy bits, cut the fluff, give me enough stuff so I can play them.
Yeah, and I think that would have been fine. Ultimately, I think the book was a little bit thin on the pages anyway, and I think they could have added a few pages and given me more of that.
Yeah, and that doesn't hurt. I mean, thicker books aren't a problem here. It's just thicker books with no information is the real problem.
Right. Well, and especially because, I mean, they reference these races multiple times throughout the books. There's one that's not even mentioned there, the Araka, which is the bird-like people, which have played a significant role in past stories in the world and are more or less major races in one of the kingdoms of the world now, and yet we have no stats for them at all, even monster stats for them.
Yeah, I was actually just going to mention that, and I found that very interesting because they do play that important role.
Absolutely. So I thought what was there is really cool. You know, I really liked the Genasi. But there's an omission. You know, there's just a lot of things that aren't there that I was hoping would be.
Well, it's just very interesting that you got very little for new player characters or player races here when you had the potential should have 5 or 6 different races that are Forgotten Realms specific.
Absolutely.
In this section.
And then chapter 2 is your character classes, and there is one new character class, the Sword Mage, which I think at this point a lot of people have heard about. It is your Arcane Defender. It is somebody who taps into magic to enhance their physical abilities with a sword to help protect people.
It's a pretty interesting class, really, when you look at it. It kind of reminds me of the old fighter wizard type class connected or multi-class put into one now.
A little bit, yeah. Absolutely. What I've found by looking at sword mages in play, though, is that they don't have very good defenses for somebody who's supposed to be a defender. They get hit a lot.
Yeah, their armor class is fairly low, and I suppose that the reasoning behind that is for the fact that they're a wizard, so you wouldn't be wearing the heavier armor, but you should still, as a defender, have some sort of way to boost that stat.
And they give some small boost to it, but just from my very limited experience, it's not enough, at least at low levels. There's not enough there to keep them alive sometimes. Sometimes you need 2 defenders in order to have one of them be a sword mage, or you got to make sure you've got a lot of leaders to keep them healed.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough class to keep alive. And then would almost imagine if you keep this class alive, it's going to be a very tough class in higher levels.
Yeah. They also give us a new pact for warlocks. It's not a whole new warlock, it's just a new pact, so some new powers to go along with them, which are interesting, and the powers are neat. I'm not sure really where this fits into the larger story, I guess.
I thought I was the only one who missed this part, why it was even in here, really, because unless they have some sort of novels coming out covering why this is an important part.
Well, there's some implication that this would be the type of pact that a drow would take if there was a drow warlock. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know why it doesn't, you know, in terms of story, not in terms of what they actually do, because in terms of what they actually do, it is unique. But in terms of story, I don't know why this is not just an infernal pact or a star pact. I mean, I guess it's hard to have a star pact from people in the Underdark, but it still sort of has that feel.
It's a dark pact because it's made in the dark.
You're right.
Bad joke.
And then the other thing they give you there is rules for the spell scars, which I was eagerly waiting. And I was hoping to find out more about the spell plague and active spell plague in that section, and didn't quite get that. But I find the way they handled spell scars to be very interesting.
Did you walk away kind of disappointed too with this section, or is it just me?
I don't know if I've seen it in action enough to know whether or not I'm disappointed. I want to actually see somebody play with some spell scars and see how it plays out.
I don't know if I feel if I am comfortable enough to let anybody play this class, because I just don't know where it go.
Yeah, and it's interesting to call it a class because it's sort of a class, but it's not a class you can actually take. It's a multi-class only class.
Yeah, and it's one of those fun little 4th edition crunchy bits that you get.
So you can multi-class into this, but you can't actually take this as a class. So you can basically trade out some of your normal powers for spell scar powers, which is an interesting take on it. It's an interesting way to do it that keeps things very balanced. But I think where this chapter really sings is in Paragon Paths. I think the Paragon Path work in this is just absolutely excellent.
Yeah, it's very well written. It's very well thought out. I think playability, it's going to be just fantastic.
Yeah, and the Paragon Paths add a lot to the world. They add a lot to the characters. They have very different types of prerequisites. You know, you can have a Paragon Path that's just for elves, and it doesn't matter what class you are. You know, and there's some that are very world specific. Like, you could be a purple dragon in Cormyr, you know, stuff like that. And I don't know. I found the wide variety and interesting use of Paragon Paths in this chapter to just be fantastic.
This also kind of includes some of those other parts that you didn't get in the campaign guide. You actually find out there's still war wizards in Cormyr.
Right.
And it gives you a little bit behind it. But yet, I really feel like this part really shines. This is probably one of my favorite parts in the book.
Absolutely. I think it's probably one of my favorite parts in both the books.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it's just the fact that I would buy this book just for this part.
Absolutely. The next section then is on backgrounds, which basically gives you a 2-page summary of a bunch of the different regions of the world. And basically says these are the benefits you get for having a character from this part of the world. You actually get some skill bonuses and that kind of thing. And it gives you a little bit of advice on how to play a character that's from there.
This is one of my biggest beefs with these two books is backgrounds and the part in the campaign guide. These two should almost have been combined into one book.
Well, and I understand why they didn't, because they wanted to have one book that was just for players and the other book that players didn't have to pick up. And so for serving those purposes, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does. It's just that for me as a DM now, I'm going to be constantly flipping between two books now.
Oh, see, I didn't find there to be any new information in the background sections. I found that anything that there I probably knew or knew more about from reading the campaign guide.
Well, I'm just thinking with newer DMs who are coming into the first time, they're going to need to probably go back and forth.
They might a little bit. What I guess my big beef with this chapter is that it wasn't done. I mean, they never finished it. They've detailed about half the world.
Well, yeah, I wasn't going to go there because I've been raving enough about how poorly the other section was written, but I'm glad you did bring it up and mention it because
I think that's huge.
It's like
if I play a character from 50% of the world, there's no information for me as a player.
Yeah, it's really limiting my choices of where to play from.
I think this is the biggest failing of the 4th edition Forgotten Realms, honestly. I think this was the most disappointing thing I've seen in either of the books, is that it's just not there. The stuff they give you is great, but they don't give you nearly enough. It's just not there.
Yes, yeah, it's very true, and it's half done, like you said, and it really does show if you play a character from certain parts of the world, you're not going to be able to say that you don't have this fantastic stuff in. I don't know. As for buying a book, this almost would turn me off from buying the book too.
Yeah, it was. I mean, now in fairness, I've got a campaign that I'm running. There are 7 players in that campaign, and it just so happened that the regions that every single one of those 7 players is from is in this book. So I mean, if they had to only do half of them, they picked the right half, it seems, because they hit the ones that are most likely to be used. But that doesn't change that I'm disappointed that, you know, if I want to put a campaign in one of the lesser used parts of the world to be, you know, unique and different and explore something new in the campaign, they don't give me the tools I need to do that with my characters.
Yeah, it's back to that gray area where it feels like they're giving the DMs a lot of playing room here. But once again, as a DM, I bought the book for a reason. Give me the information, and I will change it if I see fit to change it.
Right. Then the next chapter, then, is feats, chapter 4. And you get new feats. That's another one of the chapters where I sort of feel like I got exactly what it was advertised, right?
Yeah, it's what it is. It's what's there. You get heroic feats, paragon feats, epic feats, and a whole new list of all of them, and you know, you plug them in, and some of them will be great, and some of them will be not so great, probably.
Well, and it seems, you know, you've got some that are meant to fill some of the gaps to make it fit the world better, right? Like some of your divine feats that make your clerics feel more like a cleric of Forgotten Realms gods.
Definitely.
Which were fine, and you've got some that tie into the new races, and some that tie into the new class of the Sword Mage. But basically, I mean, it's one of those chapters where you get exactly what you want from it. You don't get, you know, it's nothing stellar and it's nothing disappointing. It's just exactly what it is supposed to be.
Yep, as advertised, for sure.
Yep. And I have very similar feelings about the chapter 5, which is the rituals chapter, in that, yeah, you get a bunch of new rituals.
Yep, and I'm kind of wondering, are they going to include these rituals in the next player's handbook again? Is this going to be a repeat information? Because some of this stuff would be nice to have, but you know, as a person who won't buy the Realms book, will they not have it?
My gut is that they're not going to have it in other books. And I think they're, again, trying to make the point to people, you don't have to play in the Realms to get use out of these books. And honestly, in terms of the player's guide, I'd agree completely.
Oh yeah, I think so.
There's not much in here that you can't use in every other game.
But I can also see the other side of folks saying, well, they're now forcing me to buy books for $40, $30, whatever dollar amount, and giving me just a chapter or two that I really want. And now I have all this extra information that I'll never use, and that's going to probably, in my opinion, probably going to turn people away from the game in that respect.
That's sort of the gamble they run. I mean, in all honesty, 4 of the 6 chapters are completely usable in absolutely any setting.
Oh, yeah, but it's going to take someone with an open mind to look through these books and say, well, this is not just Forgotten Realms, even though it says that on the cover.
Right. Well, and hopefully somebody's listening to this now and gets an idea that maybe they want to look through a little closer.
Well, that's kind of the big thing I want to share is this. I'm not running a Forgotten Realms campaign, but I'm using stuff from these books in my campaign here.
Yeah, and I think that this book really lends itself to that. The last chapter is one of the chapters that isn't going to be very useful, though, in other settings, because that's your almanac. That's where you're getting world information and just a quick run through of the gods and the calendar and the languages and, you know, society and all that kind of stuff. It's very brief. I think it's intended to be very brief to not overwhelm players, because the idea is that players don't necessarily need to know all of those little intricacies.
Yeah, it's lots of fluff, and fluff good for Forgotten Realms players, and maybe not so good for those who don't want to be Forgotten Realms players. But this also gives first-time, you know, DMs some great information to build their own campaign worlds from.
Sure, yeah. In total, the book was 159 pages. Again, I think that could have, they should have padded that out much larger and put most of those pages into the backgrounds to finish off that section. But at 159 pages, it is has a $30 cover price. At the Tomes Amazon store, it's less than $20. In general, I just sort of felt like it needed to be longer. I wanted more races. I wanted more backgrounds.
It's like the first half of a movie, really, to me. And once it got done, it's like, wow, it's over? Really? Yeah. I mean, there's not even an index in the book.
Yeah. To a Forgotten Realms fan like myself, I'd say it's probably worth... it's definitely worth the $30.
I agree completely. Even coming back into the realms a little bit, just the information reading through it, you know, for someone from the outside standpoint, I'll use these books all the time in my own game.
Yeah. And for a non-Forgotten Realms player, I think it's still worth... It's at least worth the $20 that it costs at the Amazon store, the Tome store.
Yeah, definitely. Just for the, you know, you got a new race you can throw in. You have lots of great rituals, feats, classes that you can add in, and they'll work anywhere.
Yeah. I guess if my biggest complaint about a book is that I wish there was more of it, that's pretty high praise.
I think so, too, because that just means they got me hooked. I'm reading it, and I just don't want it to end.
Absolutely. So that's the Forgotten Realms Player's Guide and the Forgotten Realms Campaign Guide. Do you have any last words you want to share?
Like I said, you know, keep an open mind with these books and go out and buy them and judge them for yourselves. Don't listen to what other folks have to say about them unless it's us.
Well, and it's funny because I started off with a lot of concern and a lot of anger about the changes in the realms. But having picked up the new version and played... a good chunk of a campaign in the 4th edition of Forgotten Realms, I have to say, it still feels like the Forgotten Realms to me. You know, I was worried that it was going to lose a lot of that feel to it, but it still very much feels like the world that it was, and as a Forgotten Realms junkie, I feel like I can add a lot to the story as, you know, I can... take the 100 years later and everything that I knew was, you know, in the far past, but at the same time I can use that a lot. You know, now the ancient ruins that I'm sending them to go and explore are the ruins of things that I'm very intimately familiar with, and I think there's some interest and some value in that.
I think the biggest thing for people is they're just scared of change, and change is scary, but you got to accept it, embrace it, and great things are going to come from it, I feel.
Yeah, and I'm still not entirely convinced that it was a necessary thing for them to do, but given that it's been done, I think they did a decent job of it.
You know, I'm a Dragonlance guy, so we've went through change a lot through the years, several times for good or for bad, and, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, this is about time Forgotten Realms got a major facelift like it just did, and it's made it more interesting to me. It actually makes me want to go back and play there.
Well, and that's interesting, because the changes seem to come from different directions, though. In the Dragonlance series, it seems like the changes mostly came from the novels.
And yeah, exactly.
And the people who created the world, you know? So it's a little easier to accept a change when it's the author of the world telling you that this is the change.
And I think, you know, Wizard of the Coast could have presented this a different way with a series of novels covering the spell plague all out before the books came out, so people would... be more ready for it, prepared.
Absolutely. I think, and this is pretty consistently true with most of my 4th edition thoughts, is that the game and the books that are out are much better than the PR at Wizards of the Coast would have you believe.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I think the biggest failing of 4th edition has nothing to do with the rules and has everything to do with the PR that they've done.
What PR?
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for joining us on this episode. We'll have to have you come back again sometime.
I'll be glad to, anytime you ask.
Maybe in a couple years when the Dragonlance books come out and your name's on the cover.
Hopefully.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us.
And that's the Forgotten Realms Campaign Guide and Player's Guide. Instead of a promo, I wanted to remind you to be sure to check out chattydm.net. Check out the ravings of the Chatty DM, where he gives you the thoughts, opinions, and reviews that you might expect from sitting around the register at your favorite game store. Chatty recently gave a review of the Forgotten Heroes book by Goodman Games that Eitan Bernstein and I recently chatted about in a previous episode. It's a book that gives you some 4th edition rules for classes like the Barbarian, Bard, and Druid. Well, that's episode 88. And why don't you email me at thetomeshow@gmail.com, and don't forget to swing by the forums and chat with the rest of the great community building around there. Also, you can help the show get noticed with reviews or votes on various sites, but more than that, get out there and tell people about the show. This time around, why don't you swing by iTunes and give The Tome Show a good review? There's 14 reviews up there now. Let's see if we can get to 25 reviews by the end of November. That's right, people, it's a challenge. Go to iTunes, review the show, and let people know why you like it. And also don't forget to consider checking out the Tome's Amazon store for products discussed on this show, this episode, and more. The show gets part of the proceeds, and that helps keep us on the airs. On the airs? On the air. Links for things mentioned in the show can be found in the show notes on the website at thetomeshow.com. And this has been episode 88, Forgotten Realms Campaign Guide and Forgotten Realms Player's Guide of
The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome.
I'm on the wall.